This is 1A. I'm Joshua Johnson in Washington. The CDC says that overdose deaths linked to prescription opioids were numbered more than 218,000 since the addiction crisis began in the late 90s. State and local governments have filed more than 2,000 lawsuits claiming that Purdue Pharma, the company that makes OxyContin, played a central role in marketing opioid medications. Today, NPR reports that the Sackler family, which owns Purdue Pharma, has agreed to give up the entire value of the privately owned firm to settle these claims. Will that be enough for those demanding justice for those who suffered? Joining us now to discuss it is Josh Stein. He's the Attorney General of the state of North Carolina, one of several state attorneys general who's been directly involved in negotiations surrounding Purdue Pharma and the Sackler family. Josh, welcome to the program.
Joshua, it's a pleasure. Thanks for having me.
We did reach out to Purdue Pharma. They declined to offer any comments beyond the statements they'd already provided to NPR, which we'll get into in just a moment. But, Mr. Attorney General, where do things stand right now in terms of these negotiations?
Well, I think we're at a bit of an impasse. But before we get into the details of the negotiations, I really want to help set the context for your listeners, because people hear about the opioid crisis, but I don't know that folks fully appreciate how devastating it is, that it's the number one cause of accidental death. The United States has had declining life expectancy in each of the last 3 years, the only industrialized nation in the world to experience that. First time it's happened in 100 years since World War I and the influenza epidemic of 1918. So people are dying. Too many North Carolinians are dying. Too many families are suffering. Too many communities are struggling. And it didn't just happen innocently. This is a result of drug manufacturers and drug distributors callously pursuing their profits at the expense of people's lives. And those companies that played a role in creating this epidemic must be held accountable and must contribute to cleaning up the mess that they created.
Are there particular parts of North Carolina, certain North Carolinians, who've been hit the hardest by this epidemic?
It's actually very well distributed, for good or for ill. It is all over the state, from Wilmington at the coast to Hickory in the foothills, Asheville in the mountains, and in the big cities like Charlotte and Raleigh. So it's everywhere, and there are very few families whose lives have not been touched by it.
You and other state attorneys general previously had suspected that Purdue Pharma would file bankruptcy rather than offering up personal wealth to settle the lawsuits. Now it looks like that's changed. What's your take on where things stand right now?
Well, I think Purdue has played as great a role of any single company in creating this epidemic, and the Sackler family has directed the actions of Purdue over the last 20 years. They aggressively pursued marketing and sales, misrepresenting the addictive nature of their drugs. And then when it started becoming apparent that people were actually getting addicted, Richard Sackler, one of the family members, said, we have to hammer the abusers at every way possible, make them the culprits. And then a few years ago, they actually created an initiative called Project Tango, in which they saw a growth industry in drug treatment. And they thought, well, heck, let's now go. There are all these people who are addicted to our product. Now let's sell them the medicine they need in order to deal with the treatment. So they wanted to get money coming and going. Our view is that Purdue Pharma needs to go away. It needs to no longer exist. But that the Sackler family, which has extracted billions and billions and billions and billions and billions of dollars over the last 20 years, needs to have some skin in the game. And that's what we're pushing for right now.
It sounds like you're suing this drug maker as if it's a drug dealer.
Well, I will leave people's analysis to themselves, but they made a lot of money.
Well, I mean, you're asking for Purdue Pharma to disappear. You're trying to break up the entire enterprise. If I was a DEA agent and I caught El Chapo, that's exactly what I would want from him, to break the whole thing up. It sounds the same.
Well, this is a company that has proven itself incapable of behaving responsibly.
We are speaking to Josh Stein, the Attorney General of North Carolina. We welcome your questions and thoughts as well, especially if you are in the Carolinas or anywhere across the country that's been affected by this crisis. What do you want to see come out of this legal fight? What do you think would represent justice, if indeed justice can be done for the lives that have already been affected? Email us 1A@WAMU.org, tweet us at 1A, or comment on our Facebook page. Let me add one more voice to the conversation. As soon as I read part of the statement that was released to NPR on Sunday, for Purdue Pharma said it, quote, believes a settlement that benefits the American public now is a far better path than years of wasteful litigation and appeals. Those negotiations continue, and we remain dedicated to a resolution that genuinely advances the public interest, unquote. That's part of a statement from Purdue Pharma. Let's get some reaction to that statement from Lenny Bernstein. He's a health and medicine reporter for The Washington Post, and he joins us here in studio. Lenny, welcome back to the program.
Thanks for having me.
If Purdue Pharma is pushing for a settlement, it obviously knows that litigation could be long and arduous, but my guess is you don't settle unless you know that losing would cost you way more.
Yes. Now, losing would cost you way more in terms of what might happen for years and years after you didn't settle, which is you would have lawyers going after your personal wealth for as many years as it takes. Once it became clear that the plaintiffs in this case wanted the Sacklers to have some skin in the game, as the Attorney General just said, it became incumbent on them to try to offer some. And the question right now is how much?
Now, with regards to that skin in the game, there's the $4.5 billion that have been offered to settle these lawsuits. The Sackler family itself has also offered $3 billion in cash as part of what it calls a global resolution, and it's offered to contribute $1.5 billion from the sale of an international drug conglomerate it owns called Mundi Pharma. Does that sound, Josh, like a sufficient deal? What's the reaction been to that offer?
Well, I think that people do believe that Purdue needs to go into bankruptcy, where it can be subject to some liquidation trust, where the value of that company can go to essentially to pay for all the states, cities, counties, plaintiffs who have been injured by the company's behavior. But we would very much be interested in having the Sackler family out of the opioid business across the entire globe as well. And so selling their international assets is an important component of any possible deal. The real rub at this point is how much commitment are the Sacklers prepared to put behind the $4.5 billion that they're putting forward? And I simply believe that given how much money they've extracted from the company, that we need more security that the states will get what Purdue represents and the Sackler family represents they would get.
Josh, I wonder if you'd answer a question from one of our listeners. Jaya Prakash emailed, what about criminal prosecution? Shouldn't the makers face penalty for causing so much death and loss?
Our legal system is very complicated. So you have state officials, you have federal officials, different states empower their attorneys general with different authority. I only have civil authority. I don't have the ability to go prosecute someone criminally. I think that were there to be criminal charges, it would come from the U.S. Department of Justice, and I don't have insight into what U.S. DOJ is considering as it relates to the Sackler family.
If you could go after them criminally, would you?
I haven't, because I don't have the authority, I haven't done the analysis of the evidence that one would need to do in order to bring charges. So it would just not be prudent for me to comment.
Okay, fair enough. But Lenny, what about criminal prosecution? Have any other state attorneys general or the feds contemplated that?
Not with manufacturers of drugs. However, there in the past few months have been criminal charges brought against two small to medium-sized distributors of drugs. Miami Lucan, which is based in Ohio, and a smaller drug distributor in upstate New York. And that's really important to understand, because the law makes the distributors the gatekeepers of opioids. They were the ones who were supposed to report the diversion if they witnessed it, or any suspicious orders of drugs. Finally, after years and years of going after them civilly and administratively, two U.S. attorneys have brought criminal charges.
Josh, is there a timeline?
Just to add to Lenny's point, there is one manufacturer where people in the company have faced criminal prosecutions by the feds, and that's a company called Insys Therapeutics that sells a particularly highly addictive form of fentanyl, pharmaceutical-grade fentanyl, not drug street fentanyl.
There are more than 2,000 lawsuits that have been filed by state and local governments to hold Purdue Pharma accountable. Josh, what's the timeline from here? What happens now? How do we figure out where the money goes? What's kind of your best case scenario on what happens next?
It's exceptionally complicated. It's more complicated than the tobacco cases simply because those cases involve 50 states, which I can tell you is complicated in and of itself. But when then you add on thousands of local government jurisdictions represented in large measure by private plaintiffs' lawyers, it does create a great deal of complication, and there are more manufacturers and more distributors. The claims are each a little bit different. So there is no single timeline. There's not as though there's one plaintiff and one defendant. It can be easily and rationally resolved. I think what we will see is, because there are trial dates scheduled this fall, there are dates in the Cleveland multi-district litigation in federal district court involving a number of these defendants starting in October, that there is pressure on a lot of these companies to see, is there a way forward that doesn't involve litigation? And I've sued Purdue Pharma. I sued Insys Therapeutics. I'm preparing to sue the Sacklers. I will sue any of them I need to, but I'm not excited about that because litigation does take a long time. And it would be much better for society if these companies would accept their role in creating this problem, put up real money, and then we can start making people's lives better.
Garrett tweeted, as a North Carolinian who lost a good friend to opioid addiction, both Purdue Pharma and the owners should be out of business. And Claudia wrote on our Facebook page, so incredibly proud of our Attorney General of the state of North Carolina. Many of us have watched this unfold for years. Finally, there is accountability. Josh Stein is that Attorney General. Mr. Stein, thanks for talking to us.
Joshua, I enjoyed it.
We'll continue in just a moment. I'm Joshua Johnson, and you're listening to 1A from WAMU and NPR. This is 1A. I'm Joshua Johnson. We're discussing the latest on Purdue Pharma's proposed settlement over these opioid lawsuits with Lenny Bernstein of The Washington Post. We'd love to hear from you, too, particularly if you have questions about the negotiations around Purdue Pharma, other pharma companies who were involved in this crisis, or if you've been personally impacted by the opioid crisis. I'd love to know what you would like to see done, or if you've already seen things that are being done, if help has already begun coming in terms of treatment or recompense for the families that have been affected. We'd like to hear more about that, too. So comment on our Facebook page, tweet us at 1A, or email 1A@WAMU.org. Already, some of you have been sharing a lot of just your general thoughts on how all of this is going. Terry wrote on our Facebook page, nothing says capitalism like reaping fortunes off of people suffering for decades. Then when caught, dump the company, screw the shareholders, and keep your mountains of money. Just like any other drug dealers, the ones making the most money are insulated from being held responsible. Lenny, I think that's kind of the point of this whole prosecution, is so that the people who are responsible don't just get to say, okay, sorry, washed our hands of the company, we're off to own an island in Montenegro, so that that does not happen.
Correct. That's why the plaintiffs want, why they want the Sacklers to put up some of their cash. According to the Massachusetts lawsuit, over a period of about 8 years, the Sacklers pulled $4.3 billion out of Purdue and put it in their own accounts. And rather than trying to fight with them legally for a decade or more and try to get that money, the plaintiffs are saying, you guys have to put up that money. Question is how much? The Sacklers have offered $3 billion. The plaintiffs clearly want more. Now, the company itself, it's going away. It's going into bankruptcy either way, and the Sacklers will exit the business. They will exit the drug business and possibly exit the global drug business as well. But I think the real rub here is, how much personal money are they going to put into this pot?
How is that possible to make Purdue Pharma just disappear? I mean, I was a high schooler when the master settlement agreement against Big Tobacco was settled. I mean, I was part of the Truth Campaign in its early days when it was just the state of Florida before it became national. And that was hundreds of millions of dollars. But the tobacco companies didn't go out of business. They put money together to prevent young people from starting smoking, and it was wildly effective. How do you make a drug company just disappear?
Well, it's actually a pretty creative plan. If the settlement were to go through, Purdue Pharma would agree to go into bankruptcy court and then resurrect itself as a public benefit trust. It would be a trust run by three trustees who would be appointed by the bankruptcy judge. And their main reason for existing would be to provide and distribute treatment and anti-overdose drugs. Now, some of the revenue would continue to come from OxyContin for a while that drug continues to have value. But it's a rather creative proposal that you take a privately held company, resurrect it as a public benefit trust, and then try to address the drug addiction problem through it.
Would the Sacklers get any money from that trust?
No. The Sacklers would not get any money from that trust. All the revenue for that would go into producing buprenorphine, which you know is the treatment drug, naloxone, which is the anti-overdose drug. The problem is that Purdue's versions of those drugs are still in development. They haven't been approved by the FDA yet. So the numbers and the value of that is a little squishy.
I imagine they haven't exactly been racing to get FDA approval for those.
Well, no, there's actually a fast track for their treatment drug.
Oh.
Yeah, they want it fast tracked. As Josh said at the beginning of your program, they have moved into the treatment world as a way of saying, well, we can do these drugs now. OxyContin, has caused us to be vilified. So we have these other drugs. We want to be part of the solution. That has been their message for probably the past couple of years. We want to be part of the solution.
Which is kind of problematic when you think about it. Hey, we made this drug that killed all these people. Now we'll sell you a drug that will stop you from dying from the drug we gave you in the first place.
I imagine if you looked at your tweets and your comments right now, you would have, 20 people saying, boy, that is really rough one to swallow. I know I get those emails every time I write a story.
Yeah, we got plenty comments, including from Carol, who emailed, I have an adult son who has struggled with the opioid problem for years. I want to know how to hold the quote-unquote pain physicians who have pushed opioids on the public accountable. I am a registered nurse. I know my son has no diagnosis to warrant a prescription for opioids. His quote-unquote physician has used my son's ability to continue to work and have insurance for his own personal gain. Lenny, there were lots of state attorneys general, state law enforcement agencies that went after pain clinics some years ago with huge success, just wiped a bunch of doctors, hundreds of doctors just out of business, boom, all at once. But the remaining doctors who are legit physicians who maybe just got caught up in good marketing from Purdue Pharma, what about them?
Well, first off, I'm really sorry to hear about that young man. I mean, I've heard that story so many times. It's really distressing. Joshua, there's culpability all up and down the supply chain in opioids, from the manufacturers to the distributors to the physicians who were either were willing to sell these things knowing they were bad or who didn't, safeguard people's lives, on down to the pharmacists who have to dispense these drugs. Everyone has failed the consumer of these drugs. We know it now in retrospect. And the authorities are going back to the doctors that your writer mentioned and saying, it's time to tighten up. It's time to stop using opioids in this way.
Now, flip side of that, every time we talk about this, we hear from folks like Jason, who emailed, who is going to make the pain meds for folks who need it and use it appropriately if Purdue Pharma goes out of business?
As you said, we hear that every single time. There are going to be drug companies. There are other drug companies besides Purdue Pharma that make pain meds. There is a market out there for legitimate pain relief. Opioids should be used for cancer patients. They should be used after surgery. They should be used for end-of-life care. They just need to be used more judiciously.
Are there other companies that make products like OxyContin? I mean, I don't know if it's on its way to being off-label or can be made generically, or if it's kind of this unique opioid medication that stands out among the others. I mean, is OxyContin really that special?
So it was unique in the 90s when they first released it. It was extended released, and that's how they persuaded the FDA that it was going to be actually less dangerous by saying that the drug, oxycodone, within it was going to be released slowly and over more time. Of course, abusers quickly figured out that if you grind it up and snort it or inject it in your veins, you get a lot more oxycodone in a short period of time. And that's when the epidemic probably took off. So, but yes, Teva is a generic maker of opioid painkillers. Mallinckrodt manufactures opioid painkillers. The Sacklers have been a very large portion of this market. They have been a very visible portion of this market. They're not the only people who supply them.
Mallinckrodt is close to a tentative settlement, I think, to avoid the first federal opioid trial, which was slated for next month. Where does that sit?
Correct. This is complicated. I'll try to keep people from turning off their radio. But there's more than 2,000 plaintiffs. But what the judge there has done is he picked two counties, two plaintiffs, Cuyahoga and Summit in Ohio. They're the canary in the coal mine. They're going to go first, October 15th. Just those two counties against all these distributors. I'm sorry, against all these distributors, manufacturers, and others, retail pharmacy chains. Those companies have the right and the ability to settle before then. Mallinckrodt has just reached a tentative settlement with those two counties alone.
So if those two counties prevail in court, does that mean that others can go forward? Does that mean that their deal applies to the others? Like, what happens then?
So everybody wants to see. There'll be a jury, and the counties will make their case over several weeks. The defendants will make their case over several weeks. And then a jury will come back with a verdict, a civil verdict, probably just before Christmas. And if the jury were to say, hypothetically, these companies are completely culpable, they owe billions and billions of dollars to these counties, that's a signal to the rest. If they were to come back and say, you know, really, you guys didn't prove your case that these companies are responsible, that's a signal to the counties and the other governments that their case is not as strong as maybe they thought it was.
That's got to be frustrating, though, if you're not Cuyahoga or Summit counties in Ohio and you're like, wait, they just screwed up. Like, we know how to, we could have won this case. That's got to be a little tense for some of those other plaintiffs, potential plaintiffs.
Well, they're working together. All the plaintiffs' lawyers are working together, and many of them are making the same arguments. So, in a way, these two bellwether cases are going to be a good test.
Let me get to a few more of your comments on this. Jeff tweeted, resolution of the opioid epidemic does not end with the prosecution of Purdue Pharma and the Sackler family. We also need to address corporate corruption of government and the regulation of the industry. Where does government, particularly the FDA, where do they fall in all this?
So the FDA, of course, regulates, the drug industry. We also have the Drug Enforcement Administration, which many people don't realize sets the annual quota for the amount of opioid that's allowed to be produced in this country. They take numbers from the companies and tell them how much product they're going to be able to create. So all of these agencies were part of this period. The DEA was the one that was going company to company trying to enforce the law. The FDA, many believe, did not take the public health side of this seriously enough. They tended to review each drug individually without saying, hey, what's out there in total? What's this doing to our society? Under the last FDA commissioner, he tried to turn that around.
So whose butts get kicked at the FDA and the DEA for all of this?
I don't know that anyone's butts have gotten kicked at the FDA and the DEA.
Because, like, isn't that their job?
Yes, I think the public feels like they should have been more strict with these companies.
Is there any, and I don't know if you know this, but I don't know if there's been any call from Capitol Hill, from either the Obama or Trump administrations, to try to improve the way that the FDA and the DEA do what they do to prevent another such crisis from happening? I mean, they were supposed to be the front line on this, and yet here we are.
Yes. And I mean, there have been hearings and there have been proposals and there have been all kinds of efforts on Capitol Hill to rein in these companies. Remember who they're opposing, though, the lobbying might of the pharmaceutical industry, which is probably the one or two most powerful lobbies in Washington.
I'm Joshua Johnson. You're listening to 1A. Anne wrote on our Facebook page, opioids make you feel like you can handle anything. It gives you a sense of well-being, no matter how horrible your life is. This is a crisis because working people today have no hope. West Virginia towns where their livelihoods have been taken are great examples. They have nothing to hope for, but opioids can make them feel like they can handle it. Sure, the Sacklers are typical rich, greedy bees. But this problem will not be solved until people have lives that are worth living with hope for the future. I hear where Anne's coming from, Lenny. I don't know what part of the country she's from. She's referencing West Virginia, which we know has been a real kind of epicenter for the opioid epidemic. But in a weird way, this epidemic has also exposed some of these other social issues, just a discussion of what is it that leads someone, other than having pain management that goes sideways, that leads someone to want to take a drug that can numb your pain so much.
You know, you cannot ignore that the prescription opioid epidemic has been a white, rural, working class to lower class epidemic. It morphed later into heroin and then into fentanyl, and that spread across the country and now, unfortunately, is an equal opportunity crisis for everyone. But the beginnings of this were in Appalachia, and they were in upper New England and the upper Midwest, where, not to paint with too broad a brush, there are a lot of folks in situations like your writer described. And you can't ignore it. I mean, to do that would be just shutting your eyes.
We should also note that Johnson & Johnson had been ordered to pay Oklahoma more than $500 million. We talked about that earlier on this program. Where does that stand right now?
Johnson & Johnson has vowed to appeal. That was the first of a separate track of litigation. All the states, like North Carolina and 40-some-odd others, have sued these companies separately in their own courts, aside from the federal case, their reasoning being that they have an advantage in state courts. Johnson & Johnson has vowed to appeal. We're waiting for that appeal to occur, but it is important that a state judge has found them culpable for fueling the opioid epidemic.
Jeff tweeted, "I've lost three close friends to the opioid crisis. Nothing is going to change until money is out of politics. I remember a few years ago, Congress approved OxyContin use for people as young as 11, acting as enablers for this type of conduct." Ronald emailed, "If these drugs were improperly marketed and distributed, why didn't government agencies intervene earlier? Everyone is singing the praises of state AGs now. Where were they 20, 15, 10 years ago?"
Well, the DEA did intervene. In 2007, they sent letters to all the distributors, and they said, "It is your responsibility to be watching out for diversion of these drugs and to be warning us about them." And that didn't happen. A lot of these companies, not all of them, but a lot of these companies just turned their heads because they were making unbelievable sums of money. And the DEA then ramped up into enforcement mode. First, they went after the docs, but that was sort of a game of whack-a-mole, as you referenced. And then they started going after the larger distributors. But it was all civil and administrative. Now we're getting to much more serious enforcement with this big federal case.
It's amazing that we've seen shots of the DEA in the late 80s and early 90s kicking in the doors of drug dens and working their way up to the kingpins at the top of drug enterprises in black and brown communities for decades. But when it comes to this drug that is killing rural white people, that they start with a strongly worded letter and cross their fingers. What the hell is that?
Well, the distributors in particular were used to being left alone, and they're very large companies with lots of power. So the DEA undertook this initiative, and you're right, they started with a letter. And if they had gotten the cooperation they needed from companies that were well-meaning, it might have all worked out differently, but it didn't. And so they used the remedies that were available to them, and the remedies available to them were civil or administrative. They took them to administrative courts a lot of time. There was not this appetite to take them on criminally. You're finally seeing that. In 2019, those two sets of criminal charges have finally occurred.
Nicole emailed, "My ex-husband was addicted to opioids for most of his teenage and adult life after a surgery when he was younger and then after another surgery when he was in his 30s. I would love to know what resources the government is going to provide for the families with the money they're getting from the settlement so that people like us can get help with the cost of the damages."
You will not be getting a check the way you see in the movies when somebody beats a big company and wins, you know, $50 million in damages. That is not going to happen. However, a lot of the money, most of the money in any settlement or verdict is going to go to treatment. It's going to go to overdose drugs, foster care, towards hospitals that care for babies born dependent on drugs, and all the ills that have occurred as a result of this. The individual family that has lost a loved one is not going to see a check in the mail.
Lenny Bernstein is a health and medicine reporter for The Washington Post. Lenny, we appreciate you breaking all this down. Thanks for making time for us.
My pleasure.
And we welcome more of your stories about the opioid crisis where you live. This is not the last time we'll be taking on the story, so feel free to stay in touch with us, 1A@WAMU.org. When we come back, we will shift gears and spend some time with director and Academy Award-winning actor Sean Penn. He's got a new novel out. We'll be talking with him about his book and getting to some of your questions in just a minute. Stay close.